return from the depths of the Badland. With a gun and a knife and a waistband. With the war with the devil and Shaytan. He wore a bad toupee and a spray tan. So high now, hoping that I land. On a tie stick, moving through Thailand. On the radio, heard a plane hijack. Government being back like the cook crack. I'm moving the world of conspiracies.
Welcome to the second episode of the as yet unnamed Lookout Landing podcast. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing, Kate Prusser, and I am joined tonight by Ralph Wiggum apologist, early 90s hip-hop expert, and graphics wizard for Lookout Landing, Sounder at Heart, and a bunch of other soccer sites that I don't know the name of. Jose Rivera, Jose!
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm anticipating we're going to get some news tomorrow about something regarding Edgar Martinez, which by the time the podcast comes out, everyone will have already known. So tell me what happens, future people.
It's going to be good. It's a good thing. It's going to be a good thing.
All right. What are our... we can go through our bets after I will introduce our other co-host for the evening, who you know as the news writer for Lookout Landing, sociologist and bat flip aficionado, Mitch Haniger fan club president, John, and possible animagus. I have to insert that part too because he might be a bear. John Troopin, John.
Howdy. I believe to be an animagus, you have to spend time in any other form. So I'm not sure if that really qualifies. I think you just end up being a bear at some point, but it's not a bad life.
No. John, has your house recovered from the Lookout Landing rager that we threw low these few weeks ago?
It depends on how you define recovered. If you mean that the walls are still up and completely painted, then no. If you mean that it is wonderful and full of colors, then yes, it is. It is still delightful.
I know that you find a new favorite thing to look at every day since we had a house party with all of our interested readership and anyone who could be there. It's a fantastic time. And since John's house is about to undergo a pretty major transition, right? It's
fair. That is a good word for complete demolition of the interior.
Yes, okay.
A major transition of
of everything.
Exactly.
John was nice enough to let us just totally deface the walls, really. I mean, what particular piece of art is speaking to you every day?
Right now, I'm staring just straight at the 24 that is on the wall, which is very satisfying, which I do prefer to the somewhat cryptic electric in all red, and then which is not quite possibly connected to the Eddie D will destroy you that's right next to where I'm sitting. So anyone that I have brought to my house subsequently who does not avidly follow the Mariners has been fairly concerned about whoever Eddie D might be.
Oh yeah, so. No, that's actually deeply terrifying. So I mentioned earlier that we have some Edgar news dropping tomorrow. Do either of you have predictions on what it's going to be so we can look back and laugh at these on Friday when you're totally wrong?
I think they're going to retire his number. They have some pretty strict rules to have your number retired. I think you have to be in the Hall of Fame already, mm-hmm. or about to be inducted, as we saw last year. So I think they're going to do that. I think new ownership is changing the rules to have your number retired. I don't think it's anything bad or anything like that.
I know they released that list of all of the sort of new promotions, so perhaps Edgar's just making another step up the rung, or maybe he's coming for Scott's job. he's always been a man known for power plays, so.
Sure. Of course. He might be better at managing a bullpen.
Certainly he's handled them better in the past. But.
I tend to agree with Jose. I wonder if it is maybe a number retirement ceremony where they decided it was just time, which I have mixed feelings about. I do think, and I don't think that this is just blind homerism, but I do think he's going to make it in, so it seems a little odd to me to retire it before it's official. But also I understand wanting to capitalize on, you know, just the wave of good feelings that we had last year with Junior's jersey retirement and that beautiful ceremony. And, you know, maybe they're just trying to load a little magic into the season, which I'm not opposed to.
Right, and I think adding his number, like actually retiring his number, maybe add some weight to his final 2 years before he gets into the definitely. Hall.
And there is no number 11 on the roster, and I can't recall many, if any, players actually having it prior, so it wouldn't be bumping anyone. It would make a lot of sense.
No, I think it was one of those things where, you know, it was like an official, unofficial thing where no one was wearing 11. Right. You know, I don't know. Does anyone wear 19? Does anyone wear 51? I don't...
no one's wearing 51. We do have two number 50s, technically, which is fun. But I think that's just because Rob Whalen has not been assigned a new number.
Rob!
Nice guy, Rob Whalen.
Hey, I suspect nice guy Rob will be allowing Nick Vincent to keep his number. No, there's not a 19.
Well, that segues pretty well. And by the way, aren't we going to look silly when on Friday or when the announcement comes out and it's actually that Edgar is now player coach and will be hitting as the designated hitter? No.
Well.
But Ben Gamo will retain his 40 man, or his 25 man spot.
He's going to be on the team. Let's just
figure it out.
I mean, that segues nicely into what we're going to be talking about tonight. So we're going to do a little bit of the projected lineup and talk about the moves that have been made, any battles that might be happening, where the team stands in relation to last year. So let's go ahead and dive on in. All right, so as you know, our starting catcher, we did pick a hard one to start out with. So Mike Zunino is not going to be spending the year in Tacoma. It's not the year of Mike Zunino anymore. That was a truncated year. He's just gonna throw him back into it. And some mixed feelings about it, but maybe not as negative as some other people might feel about this. What are you guys feeling?
I think it's now or never. I think this is going to be it for him. That it's make or break for him, pretty much. He has to show that he belongs on this roster, and if he doesn't come through this year, then like I said, I think that's
it. Is it fair to ask that of him after he didn't have his full year of Mike Zunino? He had, you know, maybe, 4 months of Mike Zunino, and then he had to come up? And...
I think so, because I still think he learned a lot. Like, even though towards the end of last year, there was at times he looked really bad again. But I think his play discipline is getting a little bit better. It was really bad. Like, his walk rate went up. I just think it's, like I said, it's now or never next year.
I mean, when we say the walk rate went up, it didn't just go up, it doubled, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was around 10%, right?
10.9%, I believe.
I mean, that is pretty amazing for somebody who is pretty consistently putting up 4 or 5%. So yeah, there's a lot to like there.
That was almost as important as anything else. It wasn't even so much that he was making more contact, which, you know, maybe a little bit, but the fact that he went from a player who would hit around 200 and would get on base around at 250 to, well, at least he's getting on base like about a third of the time. Like that's the type of thing that can make a difference. You know, like even when he was so atrocious down the stretch last year, you know, his September, October, he was still around like a 70 WRC plus, I think, which is like obviously not great, but you can, if you're a really good defensive catcher and you're around 70 to 80 WRC plus, you can get by. Your team's going to be able to survive on that.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, the big red flag for me is just the K percentage is still so high.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's practically 34%. That's nuts. That's free outs. You're giving up a free out every time, one of every three times you're at the plate.
It's especially frustrating with the team that they've designed now, which has so much speed that when we talk about the batting lineup and the batting order later, I think this will come up, but it's really frustrating when you're trying to put people around Leonis Martin and Gerard Dyson and Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura and these players who have so much ability to score or get extra bases even if you just put the ball in play. To have a player just in the middle of all that well, he's going to hit a homer or he's going to whiff. You know, yeah. He's just not going to do much in between for you.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, thing. I would trade away some of the power for just an ability to put the ball in play and for the strikeouts to come down. Because I don't think there's anything more frustrating than just those wasted at bats.
Right.
Although, and this is important to note too, I've been listening to some old Jerry interviews, and he did point out that, okay, the strikeout rate was up there, but a lot of times he was putting up better at bats. He wasn't chasing bad stuff. He was fouling things off that were close. He was trying to get something he could do with it, and the guy would just make a really good pitch. But, you know, these were longer at-bats. They were longer battles.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of at-bats where, in 2015, you would say he probably would have swung at that last year. Yeah. There were a lot of at-bats where I found myself saying that.
Definitely. And, I mean, a lot of his problems, too, came from he adjusted. He came up. He had great success. The league adjusted, and then he just didn't seem to be able to make that last adjustment back. And I think he did fall back into some old bad habits, and he tried to change things up on his own, which to me, I think, is not an indictment at all of the player, but of the previous system that he had been brought up under. He had a problem, and instead of going to someone to fix it, and instead of going to the one person who's been giving him that consistent messaging, whoever that was, and maybe it's because that person was in Tacoma, and maybe that's part of the reason Brocious is going to be up in Seattle this year.
I'm excited. I'm
very excited to have him have that steadying hand. Yeah. But, you know, that really says something to me that, like, he felt he had to solve that problem on his own. Yeah. And even in his brief time, you know, he put up positive WAR.
I was just looking at that. He put up a 115 WRC plus and a 1.2 WAR, F WAR.
And that's the thing, is like the way that he performs is so exciting and frustrating to watch, just because he puts in so much production in such short bursts.
Mm.
And it's like, at least for me, from a catcher position, I'm curious how you guys feel about it. I feel like the catcher is particularly a position where you just kind of want a steady, consistent player, which is.
Yeah.
Sort of why Ruiz was such a nice person to get, even as he's, you know, a 37, 38-year-old player. It's like, well, this guy, you know, gets on base. He's sort of very consistent in what he does, even if he's physically declining. You know, but you'd like to see Zunino just sort of stretch that out into little pieces, pace himself.
So maybe let's move on to first base and talk about that whole situation.
Our Danny V's. Multiple Danny V's.
Double V's.
Oh, flying double V's.
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a thing we could do with that.
Valencia is sort of a standard size, but I'm not sure flying is the word I would use to describe either of these.
I would love to see a flying Vogelbach, but
absolutely.
I don't know. He's looked a little slim in some of the caravan pictures. He's definitely
has.
Working at it.
What
was
it?
Goldsmith said about him deciding he was going to choose a salad. He'd been choosing salads lately.
Yes, yep. I believe it was, is he team burrito or team pizza? And he is team salad. So go on with yourself, Vogie. Voggy? I think he said he wanted Voggy. I like that his nickname was, what was it, Big Tuna? Tuna?
Yep.
There's a lot we can do with that.
There's like six nicknames that you get if you're a big person playing baseball.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Big Country, Big Tuna, Hoss. I'm sure he's been called Hoss like 30 times.
Well, should we talk about Valencia first, or should we talk about our nickname for him at the site? Thank you, Nathan Bishop. Vogdor.
Vogdor. Love it.
Vogdor. Burninating. Burninating the A's. That's all I can imagine him burninating right now.
Valencia makes the most sense to be the starter, especially out of the gate.
Yep.
I mean, they went out of their way to acquire him. You know, I think it was Paul Blackburn, which was not a huge trade, but still it was, you know, an acquisition. And he's been a consistent hitter at the major league level for 5-6 years. You know, it's even if you think he's going to be challenged by the amount of exposure he's going to get. You know, you look at his numbers cumulatively, it's better than any first baseman we've had for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
Was it you who did the piece on this, John, looking at the sucking hole that has been first base over the years?
Can you, for
people who maybe didn't read that, just like briefly give us a tour of the horrors there?
So essentially the position of first base, which is a difficult thing, but by far the easiest thing to do if you're playing baseball, other than, I guess, DHing, but you have to actually hit really well, has just been appalling since John Olerud declined, essentially.
Is it the defensive dark arts position of it is, Mariners?
Well, see, the thing is, we really believed in Justin Smoke, didn't we?
Oh, boy.
Oh.
So I'm not sure quite what the correlation is there. It might be who was the history teacher? The guy who was just a ghost?
Bins.
It might be the Professor Bins position, but... Yeah, we had, you know, Logan Morrison. We had last year Adam Lind and Dejo. We had, you know, just Smoke and Kochman and Cuss and just all these just terrible players. And we had 1 year where Russell Branion was good. But essentially, the Mariners just have been unable to find any production at the first base position. And even if Danny Valencia relatively tanks, and I realize we're saying this after having probably said the exact same thing about Adam Lind last year, he will be the best hitting first baseman that the Mariners have had since 2009, I believe, whenever Branion was here. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, really dark. And so, you know, Valencia, he's played mostly third base. He was very rough defensively there, but he's relatively athletic. It's not too difficult to play first base defensively, and you know there was a good article on FanGraphs, I believe, by a certain former managing editor of this site, talking about how he's fixed his splits issue, and so now he's not just going to be we don't have to platoon first base again, which allows for so much more defensive flexibility.
Yeah, I think the idea of the necessity of platooning him might be in the past, because between 2010 and 2014, he had only a 65 WRC plus against right-hand pitching. And over the past 2 years, he's doubled that, basically, to 118. So
yeah, he's got some really nice splits, like especially when you look at last year's. I think that's what gives me hope about him playing first base. If you go for average, he hit .318 versus right-handers. Against left-handers, and then .275, which still isn't that bad at all, against right-handed pitching. I think Valencia will be one of the better hitting first basemen we've had in a while, but Vogelbach might be good. I mean, he might shine in his opportunities that he gets.
If you can't trust what Vogelbach has done hitting against AAA pitching, I mean, then there's just no point in evaluating, you know, prospects at the AAA level.
Steven Romero.
I suppose that's fair.
Okay.
I mean,
sure. But even then, Vogelbach's skill set of getting on base, controlling the zone, showing the power at every level has translated well, and he's deserving of the opportunity, I guess, which Romero was too, and then he got it, and then he did not retain it. So,
I mean, I have hesitations about Vogelbach, which I would be so happy to be wrong about.
Sure.
I think I just haven't watched him enough. I haven't invested the time because it is very hard for me to warm up to him on a little personal level because he
I don't know anything about that. I don't know what you're talking
about. I will dedicate myself to some Daniel. He wants to be called Daniel now, by the way, which I think is some pretty big talk for a guy who has a picture of himself getting pulled in a wagon on his Instagram. But
Well, and he was, you know, he was a second round pick. He's been at every level sort of highly thought of and just has been blocked by these star players, you know. It's real easy to shine and still get sort of looked over when Anthony Rizzo's right in front of you.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
And true. Kyle Schwarber's hanging out right next to you. He's not even the biggest dude in the room.
Let's say, too, I like Jerry going after Valencia. Lind was a huge risk-reward candidate, right? So, like, they were going to accept the fact that he could not at all hit left-handed pitching.
Right.
And just feast on him being so good about against right-handed pitching.
Right.
And it just tanked. It just didn't work out at all.
Yeah.
So I like going with Valencia, who's like maybe a little more of a measured. Is he going to give you those exciting giant home runs? Probably not. But is he going to put up quality at-bats that don't make me want to claw my eyes out? Yes.
The real thing I'm curious about is, will your screaming and cursing when he gets into a slump translate from being so successful with Adam Lind to Danny Valencia?
No, that was an Adam Lind specific thing that, like, he just he seemed to thrive on my hatred. So
excellent.
My frustration. Although it didn't help him that much because he wound up putting up negative WAR. And we wound up getting negative WAR out of the first base position, which, as you say, is a position that it shouldn't be that hard to get some positive WAR out of. So.
And I think just on one last thing on this, in Valencia, as you said, is it's sort of a trend that we're seeing around the entire roster of, yeah, Valencia obviously should play mainly first base, but unlike Dejo, essentially having Dejo and Lind who can poorly play one position. You have Valencia who, if Kyle Seager needs a day off, you have a guy who, you know, he's probably not great, but you can put a good hitter out there instead of having to put Sean O'Malley out there, you know, constantly in all these different positions. Or, you know, you have a legit offensive, your offensive productivity doesn't have to fall off a cliff. Just because you need to find someone who physically can play defense.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's bounce around the infield then over to second base and talk about our second baseman.
Who's going to be playing second base this year?
I'm not sure. Might be up for a positional battle.
That was the one of the Rays trades, right? That was why we got Motter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So if you missed it on Friday, John conceived of a piece that I helped him finish off, but it was a really lovely piece about just clips of Mariners smiling and being happy, which is a really nice send off for the weekend. I felt warm and fuzzy whenever I looked at it. But we had to edit so much of it because it was like, seriously, it was 90% Robinson Cano, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, the guy is just a beam of light.
It's fun to have your stars be both athletically just such great role models and also have them personably be so relatable. You know, I think some people were talking in the comments actually on that piece about, you know, in years past, we've had good teams before, but there have rarely been there's really been a team-wide sort of vibe that is as strong as this past couple years, and I think all of that starts with Cano and Cruz, obviously. But Cano is clearly the center of this whole team.
It's Cano. It's his team.
Absolutely.
It's his show. It's the Cano show.
A number of the projections are I wouldn't say low on him necessarily, but definitely I think they have him at 3.8 on Steamer, which,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, projections are conservative. It makes sense, and we know that. But, you know, I think from what we saw last year and the previous 2 years, when Robinson Cano doesn't have two hernias, he's one of the best players in baseball, and he's still that player. And especially having a good, fast, experienced shortstop that he has played with before, not in the MLB, but still has experience with, is going to help ease his aging process a little bit as well.
I'm curious about the power spike. His projected X ISO in 2015 was 190, which would be good, which seems totally in line with what a healthy Robinson Cano should be able to do. In June, his actual ISO was 270. Yeah, and he finished at 235, which, you know, you can't, I think, anticipate those numbers for every year. But I wonder how much Iron Glenn has a role in that, you know?
Our Lord and Savior, Iron Glenn.
Iron Glenn. If you don't know who Iron Glenn is, he was Cruz's trainer first, right?
At least of the Mariners, yes.
Yeah, okay. So Cruz had been working with him. Cruz gets Cano out as he's recovering from the double hernia on with Iron Glenn. They get Felix. And obviously, you know, you see what Nelson Cruz has been putting up. You see what Cano did last year. Is Iron Glenn a genius? A mastermind?
I know Dylan Betances.
Betances.
He's also one of the people that works with him. And different player than Felix, but woof, you know, if you can work into something like that, it seems like he's got something going.
What were you going to say, Jose?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that if he can work miracles with Felix this year, I think Mariners are going to put him on the payroll.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 No. He can't work with anyone else. He has to just be ours.
Right.
I mean, we will build him a shrine outside of Safeco. It can go right along the Griffey statue.
Daddy, who's that? That's Iron Glenn. He brought back Felix from the ashes.
Iron Glenn's Instagram is a terrifying place, but it is like, it will make you want to run through a wall after you spend like 10 minutes there. I am the box. What does that mean? I don't know what that is. I'm scared. All right, so let's rotate around then to, I know that this isn't exactly going in positional order, but since we had kind of a nice segue to it, Cano's good buddy and our new shortstop. We are up, we talked about this a little last week, we are still kind of up in the air about how to say it. I've been saying Jan Segura, I have heard lots of other places, Gene Segura, but the people in the Dominican were saying Jan, so I kind of want to stick with that.
You would think it would be Jan.
It should be Jan.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but...
So I'll be really interested, especially because, you know, they do... We have quite a push here about calling players by their preferred names, putting their preferred accents in place, or diacritical marks, whatever. That'll be interesting to me. But enough about his name. Let's talk about him as the player.
Pretty good player. Last year.
And 3 years ago.
Yeah. Put up a 5.2 a couple years ago. Put up a 6.0 last year. I think we're crazy to think he can do 6.0 again.
No. I don't think anyone is thinking that.
Yeah. And that's absolutely realistic. He will regress, but it's still going to be very productive.
I think three seems reasonable. I think he's projected around 2 for a lot of places, but you know, in that 2 to 3 range, not only is that just a very solid level of production in and of itself, but that's also a roughly 3 to 4 win jump from last year.
Yep. I mean, let's talk about that a little. We have a negative 0.7 is what Cattell finished at.
Wow.
Yeah.
Negative 0.7. Anyone want to take a guess at his walk rate?
Oh, God.
Over under 5.
Gotta be under. Oh, I'm thinking under.
Is it over under 3?
Well, it is over 3, but it is 3. And in fact, it's just a shade under 4. It's 3.9, though.
Wow,
3.9. That is rough.
Yikes.
That is really rough. And I think, I mean, all good wishes to Cattell, but boy, was it painful to watch him take at-bats last year.
Yeah, he was just guessing when he was up there.
He was just guessing.
And it was just so frustrating.
So, really, I always kind of chuckle to myself when I hear people debating whether Segura is going to put up 4 or 3 or whatever. He just needs to put up 1. If he just puts up 1, we'll be in good shape. will be in better shape than we were last year. I mean, I have higher expectations for him, obviously, but he is replacing a sucking black hole. All he has to do is not be a sucking black hole.
Exactly. I mean, I think he needs to, we'll need him to be at least in the 2-3 just because, you know, Cano, I think, will be good. Is Cano going to be a 6-win player? Very possibly, but it, you know, there's just a lot of other places where people were standouts and we might not have that. So having him be in that, you are approaching an all-star or, but a very good starter level sort of, that would make me feel very good. And I think if he's that level, I feel very good about this team being a playoff team. If he's in the 1 range, you kind of need everyone to be studs again, be full stars again, which is a lot to ask. But I think he's got it in him.
I was just going to say, I think the fact that his buddy Robbie is with him, who helped him fix a swing last year, plus we got Edgar there, so if he starts getting away from, you know, what he did well last year, I mean, you've got those two guys that will surely get him back where he needs to be.
Right.
So that's why I don't think he'll fall all that much. I think he's going to be in a good place and feeling very good about that position now.
Where do you guys fall on the can he play shortstop defensively spectrum? Because I think that's been my biggest concern, actually, over his hitting. I think his hitting is going to be fine. I don't think he's going to have a 350 BABIP, but yeah. I think he's going to be okay and a solid top-of-the-order player. Mm-hmm. But defensively, that's sort of my only concern.
It's a little concerning at a very important defensive position. But then I remember we had Brad Miller.
It's true.
And I watched him airmail throws.
The Reverend Bad.
I watched him airmail throws into the first row of seats. So, you know.
It's important to have context. And again, shortstop, another position where Segura literally will be the best hitting shortstop we've had since Alex Rodriguez.
God.
And might be the best shortstop, period, that we've had since.
I mean,
Alex
Ketel Marte played, for all, I'm harsh on him about his batting, but he did play a very nice shortstop. He had errors here and there. He had blips. He really could make the outstanding play, you know?
He had the range.
He did. Yeah. I'm not sure Segura has the range. I'm not sure he's going to make the flashy plays, but I think he's going to make more of the routine plays.
The thing about Marte was, it's kind of like when scouts talk about raw power versus game power. Marte had raw range, but he didn't have game range. And it was very strange. Like, you'd see him run, you'd see him sprint, and he had raw arm, but he did not have game arm. Mm. You know, it was frustrating to see him clearly physically be there, but either be so much in his own head or be physically messed up or whatever it was, it just wasn't happening. And I think he was definitely in the negatives by most defensive metrics. I don't know how badly off the top of my head, but yeah, it was in him. But I think Segura will be a little more steady, even if not exceptional.
Even if he's not spectacular, all we need him to be is steady. All right, so the last spot then in our infield club belongs to third base and the eternal one. How much better can he get? It's not about regression. I think if you're talking about Kyle Seager regressing or being anything other than just a steady guiding light, that's just ill-informed. Because the guy, literally, he has gotten better every single year. He's hit more home runs every single year. He just keeps getting better. And I think, you know, he might not be a 5.5 win player this year, but I think he's close to that. But he might. Exactly. So are we bullish on Seager? If so, why?
I mean, I think everything you just said, he's getting better with every year. I think he hits 35 this year.
I like it.
I like that right out of the gate.
Yeah, why not? I mean, like you said, I mean, he hit 30 this year. Let's bump it up 5. He can do it.
His home run totals go 20, 22, 25, 26. Last year, he was projected to hit 20 home runs by Brett Talley at Fangraphs. And I think he just took that as a personal insult and hit 30. So yeah, does he hit more than 30, over under 30 home runs this year? Jose, you taking the over?
I'll take the over, and I'd say even
33. 33?
I'll bring it down a little bit.
I think the over. I think if it may be, you know, I may be just putting myself in a long line of people to say, well, that's probably as good as we could see. But if he can be that same player and now he gets to hit with actual decent people around him, mm-hmm. and he's going to have more runners on in front of him. He's going to have more, you know, protection is a shaky term in terms of whether that's a real thing in baseball. But I'm excited to see him. He's going to get more at bats purely by just being a better offense. So mm-hmm. I think that's something I'm very excited to see, is more Kyle Seager opportunities with Gene Segura on base and Robinson Cano on base.
More Kyle Seager. Period.
Yes.
Delightful. All right. Well, I think that sums up the infield. Maybe we'll take a little break and then we will come back and do designated hitter in the outfield. Welcome back. We are moving right along. We've zoomed past the infield. We are into the outfield. But first, we have to make a little stop off in the batter's box and talk about Nelson Cruz. What can we say about Nelson Cruz?
It's been an absolute pleasure watching him in a Mariners uniform.
I mean, who knew that this was going to turn out as great as it has?
Like, I was expecting him to do okay, but not this, not for the 2 years that, you know, with what he's done. It's just been so much fun to watch. It's incredible.
It is inconceivable that it worked out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was, like, we remember, like, they're targeting Trumbo, they're targeting Nelson Cruz. Like, there was, like, a three-year saga of, oh, the Mariners trying to get Nelson Cruz. Oh, the Mariners messed up trying to get Nelson Cruz. The Mariners should have gotten Nelson Cruz, except, of course, the Mariners are going to sign. And then they did, and they paid way too much money for this aging slugger whose only skill was power, who couldn't play, who everyone knew couldn't play defense, and he's been so good. It's outrageous.
Outrageous. I know, it's a Mariners unicorn. It's the signing of an aging power hitter. That has so far worked out. And I mean, even if it doesn't work out as much as it has, we have already gotten such incredible production out of him and out of that contract.
Yeah. I mean, Grant, I remember Grant's piece when I think you did it right after the big sort of massive home run that was in L.A., and he essentially actually went through with the numbers and with the contract, and by that he's already way exceeded his value for just WAR to dollars, and has continued to build on that excess. So it's incredible.
And who knew that we were going to get, in addition to a great hitter, a great person and a great clubhouse mitigating force, a great co-leader along with Cano, somebody who really understands the importance of being a veteran and being there for other players and helping the younger guys out when they're struggling. And, you know, you can't measure that really, but.
And DePoto has talked about it. Service has talked about it. The other people in the front office, his teammates, and they've all sort of discussed, you know, obviously he's an incredible player. He's, you know, a great teammate, but I remember, Kate, when we were going through I think, interviews that he was doing in the Dominican mm-hmm. and getting some translations and different things, and how incredibly smart he was talking about the specific things that he had done well and the things he struggled with, and how clearly he had such a deep understanding of baseball, and how those are the types of players, you know, when we think about Edgar and how he was such a student of the game and how that helped him succeed despite his physical limitations for so long, and how we found another sort of player like that in Nelson Cruz. It's amazing.
And it's something I don't think you can appreciate unless you do listen to him speak in his native tongue, because and not to say that his English is not excellent. His English is excellent. But there is a richness to his vocabulary and such a clear intelligence and wisdom when he is speaking in his first language that just really makes itself so apparent. You're like, oh, I'm in the presence of somebody who really, really knows this on a deep intellectual level and is able to express that.
What is your percentage level thought that he falls off this year? What's the likelihood that he sort of, this is the year that he Richie Sexsons, or that he, you know, just essentially that I am not too concerned, just because I've never seen any 36-year-old man who is in as good of shape and takes as much meticulous care of their body as Nelson Cruz. But I do think it is something worth considering, that you can do a lot of good and some point age does get to you. But yeah. I'm curious what you guys, what your concern level is there.
I'm in the middle. I mean, I think there's going to be a drop off this year. Steamer has him at 1.9, which I think is pretty low.
That is, quite low. He was around 4 last year, right?
Yeah, 4.2 last year.
Yeah. He's been 9 the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a massive drop off, which it can happen. I'm not saying it won't. Mm-hmm. I just think, like you said, just the way he knows the game, the way he takes care of his body, I just think that it's not going to be that much of a drop off. The only thing I guess I'm a little concerned about is the injuries piling up. He had a couple of injuries towards the end of last year that bothered him with the wrist, and I think he was having back spasms as well. Mm. You know, I hope that doesn't start to catch up. But for the most part, I'm feeling pretty good about him next year.
I'm not sure if he just gets like a reset on the season, because some of those injuries seem to be cumulative things. The back spasms, the hand problem, the nerve damage. So potentially the off season and a really good workout regimen and rest and just all of those good things helps him get back to that shape.
For sure. And I think it's worth noting, he was our starting right fielder last year.
Yes.
For all of the moves and all of the good things that we did, he was still playing the outfield a lot last year, and he will almost certainly never do that unless it's an interleague game this year. So that is at least as much as you can counterbalance, you know, not only just having to be in games, but he doesn't really have to practice being in the outfield that much. He can sort of spend a lot more time off those knees that gave him a lot of trouble in the late 2000s.
And a lot more time with Edgar, who, if you want an example of how to be a great designated hitter and somebody who can shepherd you through that transition in your career into being a full-time DH, which he's not had to do, which he has said before is a struggle for him.
Right.
He wants to be out there helping his team, and he thinks it's kind of boring, which is fair. So now he's got somebody who can be by his side, who can really teach. He can learn from the best. So, well, we are sorry that there is no more room for you in the outfield, Nelson.
Not that sorry.
We are not entirely sorry, though, because we have some exciting stuff going on out there. I think I'm going to make John wait and just torture him, and we'll start off maybe in center field with Leonis Martin.
Nice.
All right, fine.
All right, Leonis had, by all accounts, pretty much a career year last year, right? We'd say that was a career year.
Well, no. I think 2014 was probably his. I mean, if you're looking at based off of WAR, he had a 3.6 in 2014. And then 2.2 last year.
But did he ever hit 15 home runs?
Well, then if no. I mean, he essentially doubled his highest home run amount.
Which is nuts. Where did that come from? Where did
he
that
power? He became a different player. It was a career year in the sense that he started a new career as a slightly different Leonis Martin. Because he was a slap hitter. Yeah. You know, he had some okay power, but you know, he'd never hit double-digit home runs, and he was a fast guy who would put the ball in play a lot and would beat out a bunch of base hits, and we saw him try to bunt for base hit about 55 times this year and successfully do it once, and it drove me insane every time, but he found a way to become a decent power hitter, which was really exciting, and unfortunately, after he got hurt in the end of May, that kind of fell off, but it's still intriguing.
I am interested about the change that happened in his launch angle and how he dropped his ground ball rate so much. He dropped it by practically 10 points and just really started hitting the ball in the air some more. And at Safeco Field, there's a chance that when you hit the ball in the air and you hit it over the first row of guys' heads, that might find some green out there, right?
There's some space.
His hard contact was up, too. And, you know, I think maybe part of it is coming into that age a little bit and changing his body. I've been keeping track of his workouts in Cuba and at home in Miami. And he's, you know, he looks great. He is definitely putting in the work to keep up that more muscular frame. But, no, I think, you know, Martin is kind of, he's happier here for sure. He's in kind of a better headspace. He put up some pretty good numbers last year. He seems to be feeling more comfortable.
He's a solid player.
Yeah.
He's been getting a lot out of working with Edgar. I don't see him falling off that much. 15 home runs seems like a lot to hope for. Steamer, I think, is projecting him for 13, which still seems like a lot.
They have him at 10.
Yeah. 10? Oh, 10. Maybe they get 13.
Yeah, but Fangraphs have him at 13. But yeah, he and Segura sort of represent the only two, and maybe Valencia, I guess, sort of represent the only two veteran starters who are not clear stars on this team, and it's interesting to see that you would think Martin and Segura are sort of going to be the steady players, and if they are steady players, then this team was going to be fine.
Right. Well, let's switch gears then, and talk about Gerard Dyson. so this was a trade that I think Jerry had definitely wanted to make for a long time. I think when it first came down the wire, we were sort of like, why are we giving up another exceedingly precious rotation arm in order to acquire yet another speedy outfielder? Mm-hmm. Right? That felt a little weird to me at first. I was warmed, definitely, by the fact that Kansas City Royals fans seem to be completely miserable, which always helps. You know, there was much rending of garments over at Royals Review, so that always makes you feel good. But what are our expectations for Dyson, or where do you see him fitting in?
I'm very excited for him this year. I don't think he puts up the same WAR he did last year. Last year he put up a 3.1. Steamer's got him for 1.7. I think he'll probably be around that, 1.5 to 2, maybe.
Yeah.
But the speed is just going to be so much fun. We haven't had this kind of speed on the team in, well, never.
In, well, and, never.
Stolen bases are going to be a lot better this year. I don't think they're going to be too bland as much. Gerard Dyson knows what he's doing on the base pass, and that's going to be really nice to see. He hasn't been a full-time starter, so I guess that's probably the one thing that's a little concerning, but I don't think it's that much of a big deal. He is a lot older than I thought he was. He's 32. I thought he was like 27, 28, but I mean, obviously, if last year was any indication, I don't think he's losing any of that speed this year.
I don't know. Speed can fall off a cliff. Speed makes me a little nervous if that's the big tool that you're bringing to the table. Although, it's a win-now move, right?
Yeah.
And his utility is also that Martin now doesn't have to play 161 games. Or 100, right. You know, go out there with a bum hamstring. You know, you have Gerard Dyson, who has been a above average and honestly exceptional defensive center fielder for most of his career, who will happen to be playing probably left field. So that is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to have a player that is a part-time player, it is nice that Dyson is a lefty. So he is able to face the majority of pitchers. I guess he's going to slot in well against right-handed pitching, and he's been a decent hitter against them his entire career.
Well, I think now it's time to talk about another exciting new young player that we have in the outfield, Ben Gamel.
Kate, my friend.
Go ahead and take this one, John.
Oh, well, I did actually do some research on Ben Gamel recently, and he's got a brother who also has interesting hair. That's kind of what I got for you.
And he looks like an extra from the OC, kind of.
Indeed.
Jerry is obsessed with Ben Gamel, right? Like, he will not, he just won't stop talking about Ben Gamel.
It's one of those things where it's been hard to tell, is this just trade posturing? Has this been the up talk about, oh yeah, doing great stuff? Or is it legitimately Jerry thinks this is the guy?
I wasn't sure, but then they put him on the caravan.
They put Cody Martin on the caravan too.
Go Zags. That's an Eastern Washington play, but
that's fair.
I think it was a little bit of trade posturing, and I don't think that worked out. So that's how we got Dyson.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe Gamel puts it together and he ends up being a decent player, but
just fine.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. That one's kind of weird, because then you've got an essentially a very similar player in Gamel, who I prefer, which we'll talk about him in a little bit. But
yeah, I mean, so Gamel and Heredia, I think it's fair to maybe compare the two. Because both of them are going to be competing for that fourth outfielder slot, because even though I am teasing John and not allowing him to talk about his favorite player, there is one other player who will be occupying a slot in the outfield. We think probably, and, you know, it's hard with the young guys, but we think probably most of the time. So, yeah, I mean, I am team Guillermo, but I looked at their numbers. I tried to find some difference between the two. What is it? Why is it that Jerry is so taken with Gamel? What is it that Heredia is maybe lacking? And I couldn't really find anything. You know, Heredia had an 11.2 walk rate against a 14% K rate in his 107 plate appearances. He did even better at the AFL with a 14.5. walk rate. I mean, you know, he tore it up in the AFL. I think he hit like 275, 403, 431. I mean, that was in against very, very high level competition. I mean, the AFL is uber competitive. So yeah.
Jose. They have been talking so much about Gamel, but he just doesn't make sense with the players that they have. I mean, you know, especially with Dyson, who is essentially needing a platoon partner or will need a lot of help against lefties. It doesn't make sense to bring Gamel, who might not have a strong platoon issue, but if you have a right-handed hitter who's equally good or better, why would you not go with Heredia?
Great question. it's kind of bizarre. I don't know. I really can't put my finger on it. I think we'll just have to wait and see what happens in spring training.
The only thing I can maybe think of is Heredia hasn't shown in the U.S. at least to have a ton of power, and Gamel doesn't have a ton of power, but he is able to make a little more hard contact than Heredia was.
Gamel doesn't fall across home plate every time he swings.
That is true.
While I find it mildly endearing about Heredia, and does, I would assume, help him get to first base more rapidly, seems to leave a little bit of power in the box.
True. Yeah, Heredia's swing needs, that thing is raw. It's rough to watch. He just flies open like a barn door. But yeah, I think Gamel he never had a double-digit walk rate above the A level.
I wonder if it's almost the opposite that we're maybe thinking of, that they, because Heredia's been very successful and had some positive results, but hasn't necessarily figured out his mechanics and all these things, that they don't want to be talking him up and putting too much pressure on him, that they want him to feel that he still has the space to develop and that he doesn't have to be a fully formed product this year.
That's an interesting point. Caveat there is Heredia is a little bit older, right?
Right.
Old to be hanging out in AA, AAA. But I guess that's fair when you think about the fact that he spent a good portion of his time in AA last year.
Right. Yeah, and then he didn't play all that long in Tacoma. So, yeah, definitely majority of it was in Jackson.
Yeah, so maybe it is a little bit, and Jerry mentioned that I guess something having to do with like his immigration or his legality here in the country, he can't play in any of the international leagues, so he had to go to the AFL and play in the taxi squad there. So that's something that limits his ability to develop as well. But I don't know. I think that is maybe one of the big... That is one of the big question marks that maybe everybody has, is what is a Ben Gamel? Stop trying to make Why is a Ben Gamel? Yes. All right, I've been torturing you, John, because I have been resisting allowing you to talk about your new favorite. But go ahead, lay it on us.
Mitch.
Mitch. Yes. Such an old man name. Mitch.
It is an old man name, but it is a good name. I am unnecessarily excited about Mitch Haniger.
I don't know if it's unnecessary.
Nah.
Everybody needs a cheering squad.
This is fair. I have basically, since the Taiwan Walker, Ketel Marte, Yan Segura, Zach Curtis, Mitch Haniger trade, been diving deeper and deeper into a Mitch Haniger hole, and it has become my new home. It's beautiful, it's spacious. The walls are just very, very vibrant. It's a delightful place to be. I'm really optimistic about Haniger. Obviously, last year he had a little bit of time in the major leagues, played center field for the most part, was a good defensive center fielder.
Oh, good. Another center fielder. We need one of those.
Well, you never know if you might want to re-gift one or maybe the first one breaks and you just have to return it.
You never know if the store is going to be closed, too. You exactly. Have one on hand.
Could have strange hours. So, yeah, Mitch is a little bit older for I guess you would call him a prospect, in that this will be his first full season, but he's just turned 26. There's a lot of things that you would look at his profile and have concerns, certainly. He had a stretch where he was sent back down to AA because, or single A rather, because he actually requested that he go down so that he could get more reps to work on his swing because he felt he was just not doing the right stuff. He's an extremely cerebral player. He's through somewhat extensive to the point of uncomfortable levels of research, found discussions of his interests in Bobby Tewksbury, who's a renowned sort of hitting thinker, and a lot of different discussions that he's had both in college, in his summer leagues in Corvallis, home of our own Ethan Novak, and just at every level, being someone that was a leader, someone who always worked to improve himself, and having made an extreme sort of adjustment in his swing this past season in the minor leagues, put up a 185 WRC plus in AAA, which I think is pretty good.
Is that good?
It's
that
okay.
Good.
It's okay. Yeah. So, obviously, that is more than you're going to expect, and he had some struggles in the major leagues, but I mean, he had a 256 BABIP and still put up an 81 WRC plus with good speed, great defense, and a strong arm, and got on base. He's got the entire C to Z profile and has power to boot. So I am sold on our new right fielder.
You know, I love a cerebral. I love a fellow cerebral. That's why I love Andrew Moore.
I would like to note that I think I've discovered that the other selling feature that I do have for players that I like is he does have just a very warm smile, and that may have an undue level of influence in this evaluation, but yeah, he's going to be good.
So, John, part of the I think part of the mania that maybe Jerry feels for Ben Gamel is the idea that he's athletic, he's got the arm, he gets on base, and you know, the team has been lacking a leadoff hitter for so long. Where do you see Haniger fitting best in the lineup?
So this is a very tough part. Ideally, well, in my wildest dreams, I see him as a two-hitter. But you don't usually put a completely or essentially unproven player in the two-hitter role. So I think he would probably be best served going and starting either in the 7-hole or the 8-hole. Either right in front of or right behind Leonis Martin, where they can both provide. They're sort of similar players if Martin's profile from last year bears out. He has power and speed and the ability to get on base. So if you let him get on there, Martin can knock something into the corner, and he's going to have the ability to score. I don't love him ahead of Zunino, because as we discussed, Zunino's probably not going to make quite as much contact. And Haniger has acceptable speed, but he doesn't have... it's never borne out into exceptional base stealing, whereas Martin and Dyson clearly have that top-level base stealing speed. So I think he's best served running.
Do you think eventually we could fit him into the Seth Smith spot in the lineup as a younger, more athletic Seth Smith?
I think he absolutely has that potential. I mean, even if you just look at his numbers from about 120 at-bats or plate appearances, rather, last season, you know, he hit .229, but he had a .309 on base percentage. He was getting on. He has some power. You know, he clearly has the patience to get up there. He stands really far away from the plate, which
seems less than optimal.
Well, it is definitely not great if you're going to try and hit a bunch of pitches that are outside, but he does this consciously with the recognition that he's probably not going to get a lot of power on pitches that he's swinging at that are low and away. So he essentially dares pitchers to throw perfectly on the outside corner and welcomes anything on the inside that he can pull for power. So he's really good at managing the zone, both in practice and conceptually, and I think that has a lot of parallels with Seth.
I was already sold even before he... Like, I'm pretty high on Haniger as well. So, I mean, he hit everything on the head there. I'm all in. I'm really excited to see what this kid can do.
I know I've already waxed quite a bit on this man that I have a great deal of affection for, but if I can put two very short little things that I think are exciting is, one, he had one of the best profiles on, I believe, Baseball Savant tracks, sort of easy, standard, difficult, and highlight level catches in terms of balls that are hit to the outfield and what you might expect a center fielder or an outfielder to make a play on, or any fielder. And Haniger didn't miss any routine ones, had a very high rate of making highlight plays. So that speed, even if it doesn't unfortunately translate as well to the base paths, or at least to stealing bases, his range is top notch.
I think I read something similar about Dyson, actually, where he missed like no easy plays, or maybe it was just one easy play last year.
Absolutely.
A ball might never drop.
That's kind of what they're gambling, isn't it? That's the big gamble.
And I think Martin also had like 2, 3, like it was also a very low number.
Yeah.
That dropped. I remember once we got Dyson, I actually went and looked at Savant's nifty little charts and compared all three, and
it's exciting.
It's pretty.
All right, well, it should be a definitively different product than we have seen in outfields of years past, where, you know, it's basically been a collection of old refrigerators and you know, those machines outside of grocery stores that you put a quarter in to ride.
The final thing I will say on Haniger is he's also not a free agent until 2023. So
that's how Jerry likes
control he loves.
Kind of nice. Kind of nice and cheap.
Well, hopefully he will be good for us for that amount of time.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, I think that that about covers things. Overall, how are we feeling compared to the team last year at this time?
I would like each of you to, if it's not too time intensive, try and name, I'm looking at it right now, try and name the 2016 starting lineup, what it was last year.
Aoki.
Yes. Left field.
Aoki, Martin, Smith?
Yeah. Yep.
No, Cruz.
Nope.
Cruz, right field.
Right field.
And then
in fairness, yeah.
Marte, Seager, Cano, Lind.
Yes, indeed.
And Iannetta.
Indeed. DH?
DH.
The mighty Franklin Gutierrez.
All right. How can I forget him?
Just comparing it to last year, the defensive prowess stands out so vividly.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm optimistic about the team. At least the product on the field will be
watchable?
Nice to look at. It'll be fun, and I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about that defense now. And the big thing about the defense, too, is that it helps the pitchers in terms of confidence. Now they can kind of mess with more and throw different things, and I think it helps them out as well quite a bit.
I think... I'm excited just to see kind of those holes closed up, like the shortstop hole, the first base hole, and then all the layers of nets that are under these things. Okay, if somebody in the outfield fails, there are 17 different people who could step up and take that place.
Right.
If Zunino struggles, I don't want to have to rely on 38-year-old Carlos Ruiz, but we do have something that is built in. That is a proven product.
That's, I think, you're exactly right in that. I think that's as much as the starting lineup looks a little bit better. I think that the
the depth.
Second options and the third options are what likely are going to stand out as much or more, because last year, if any of, you know, if Seth Smith got hurt or we need, you know, Aoki was out, Nelson Cruz has to play the outfield a bunch, you know.
Daniel Robertson has to play the outfield.
Exactly. Leonis Martin gets hurt. We don't have a center fielder. We just put five infielders out there. You know, now it's, oh, any of, you know, Martin needs a day off. You just move Dyson over. You've got Heredia or you've got Gamel. Someone else gets hurt. Well, it's not great, but Valencia can play left or right field, you know, passably, and you can put Vogel back in at first base. You know, they're struggling. Well, DJ Peterson's in AAA. You know, he's, we'll see, obviously, but, you know, that's a plausible player. You know, Nelson Cruz has a back spasm and needs a week off. You just put Vogel back in there, and you have at essentially every position. Catcher, I'm still a little shaky on, but pretty much at every position, you have someone that you can look at and say, this is not going to be a catastrophe.
It was such a smart way to build a team, too, I think, to build a team that fits Safeco, finally, after all this time. you know, because we've been talking about it and talking about it, and finally, you have a team that fits the confines of Safeco Field, and in a year that was really, really weak for pitching, for free agency, we concentrated on building really good defense. We concentrated on run prevention. And just
which is exactly what Jerry wanted on day one.
Everything he said he wanted to do. I know, he's so sneaky in the way that he comes out and tells us exactly what he's going to do and then does
it. How dare he?
The nerve. But yeah, I just think that that's really, it's amazing that we will have gone from having one of, if not the worst, defensive outfields in all of baseball 2 years ago to what we're going to be running out this year. It's amazing.
You know what we also don't have to do is watch Nori Aoki, who is theoretically a fine defensive outfielder, but is a heart attack in a 5 foot, you cannot tell me he's bigger than 5 foot five body. So even the players who were theoretically decent were not pleasant to watch.
Something about Safeco Field just reacted horribly with Nori Aoki.
It's the routes. Oh my god, the routes.
Just ridiculous. I mean, I'd be sitting in a seat and I'd half expect to like find him next to me at some point. Hey.
I mean, even go back, years past where we had ostensibly decent defenses. It was Dustin Ackley in left field in 2014.
Oh my gosh, Dustin Ackley, left fielder.
Yeah, it was.
Don't forget
Abraham Almonte.
The Brad Miller outfielder days, too.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
We had a couple of those.
Ketel Marte, center fielder. I mean.
Oh my gosh.
That's right.
All right, yikes. Mariners fans. Like, we don't know what we're going to get, but our long national, well, regional nightmare is over. We will have a watchable defensive outfield this year. Yeah. And hopefully some good stuff on the other side of the plate as well. All right, I think we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we will address some of your Twitter questions. Lately I've been glowed up, feeling like the only one out here. Welcome back. Now is the time on the podcast where we take your Twitter questions, / you could submit them to us other ways. I don't know, smoke signals, passenger pigeons, whatever. We thank those of you who have sent in your questions and beg those of you who have not to please let us know what's on your mind. They don't have to be about Mariners baseball. They can be about anything. For example, you could ask, what is John drinking right this second?
Hunting-themed Keystone Light.
And John, do you think you are the only person on Queen Anne Avenue right now?
I am recording this wandering up and down Queen Anne Avenue, and certainly I am the only person doing that. But I would wager that I have the hill locked down vis-a-vis Keystone Light.
Consumption.
Reserves.
You are the mayor of that particular tiny, yes. Strange town.
My tiny little principality. It is delicious and smooth, just like
water.
Whatever mountains are on here.
All right, Jose, hit us with what we got this week.
All right, first question we have is from Josh Cow, and I can say that correctly now. Finally, he asks us, "How do you pronounce Guillermo Heredia last name?" Because I think everyone is wrong. So, the way I said it. What do y'all think?
Done. Next question.
Right?
Next question.
Yeah. It's Heredia.
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 Yeah. All right. Next question we have is from Speechy McPeachy. Why is Sean O'Malley the greatest Mariner of all time?
Certainly, I have never seen, I have seen few things as exciting as the Griffey Day home run.
Yeah.
I will never forget that. That was about as cool as you can have for a hometown team, hometown kid. I also have been to Richland and the Tri-Cities, and I've played on some of their baseball fields, and I think that the greatest thing that he has done is make the major leagues after playing on, if he ever played on one of the fields that I played on, which the main feature was that it you couldn't tell which of the mounds was the real man from a distance. So,
oof.
Yeah, I mean, good on Sean O'Malley for that moment with the home run on Griffey weekend. Sometimes baseball is so incredible that you cannot. If you wrote it down, it would be dismissed as bad fiction, and you know that seems like one of those moments. But it was real and it was fantastic, and it was one of my favorite moments of all of last season.
Because, I mean, shortly after he hit the home run, or he made a defensive play first and then hit the home run. I forget the order, but, like, it was all within 10, 15 minutes of each other. And
I was there for that, actually, I think. And when the crowd started chanting, Sean O'Malley, I had goosebumps.
Love some grit.
All right, next question we have is from our very own Grant Bronsden. Favorite memories of playing baseball?
I didn't play baseball. I mean, I did, but like Charlie Brown baseball was. Sorry, this is purely a John question.
That's fair. I'm curious about, just because I do have some recent memories, but I am curious about y'all's experience. Obviously, my favorite memory was having a young blonde Grant Bronsden in center field chasing down so many long fly balls.
I feel like there was a lot of nepotism on both sides of this question.
never in our lives. No. My probably most cherished memory was in when I was about 13. I threw a no-hitter on my dad's birthday.
Nice.
Which was awesome, and I also had not gotten him a gift yet, and he didn't ask, so I just told him that was my gift for him. So it was both a emotional moment and a very economical move on my part.
You can't put a price tag on that. Come on.
No,
you literally can.
He didn't. but if I had to, it probably would have been about $20, and I put that towards a AAA video game, I'm sure. So,
With mine, I actually tweeted this story out. I was about 13 years old playing Little League in Germany, and I had a game-winning home run that actually cleared the outfield fence. Supposedly, I was like the only kid to do it that year. I'm running around the bases, you know, enjoying the moment. And as I run third and I'm coming home, I trip about 5 feet in front of home plate, my pants fall down during the process. And I fall.
YA tittle.
And I fall face first, literally, on the home plate. Yeah, that's
probably one of my... Which is actually I believe, the German flag. That's on the German flag, right? Yeah, right.
It's the alternative logo for the Catalanic.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite memories. I can look back on it and laugh at it. I remember during that moment, I was laughing. It was just so absurd. And yeah, that's my story.
What do we got next?
Oh, yes. Next question is from Ben Theon. Pretty good question, actually. Which bat that does not make the opening day 25 man has a chance to make the biggest impact in 2017?
I think my answer will be different from at least one of yours and possibly two of yours, but I will say DJ Peters.
That was going to be mine. Yeah.
Because there's not really a spot for him right now, obviously. He's behind Valencia, he's behind Vogelbach, and he's certainly behind Nelson Cruz. But if Vogelbach clearly just isn't ready or just is struggling, Peterson is immediately the next best first baseman in the organization. And if Peterson shows that he's ready to hit and ready to play at the AAA level, he can hop right up. And especially if Nelson Cruz goes down for any amount of time, we need a DH. We need a someone who can hit. And all of the moving around and all the different issues he's had, he's probably not, the DJ Peterson outfielder experiment of 2 weeks probably should die. But
yes,
if he can just hit, he's going to have a spot. Or I should say, he has the opportunity to make an impact. So he's my vote.
Yeah, and that was actually my vote, too. That's literally who I was going to say as well. Yeah, because there's not a whole lot of places for him to play. There's no way he's going to be in the outfield. They got that locked down. And you figure, I think the best case scenario, what do you think? Next year or the year after? Because Valencia we only have for 1 year.
Right.
DJ Peterson, if it all works out in Tacoma, he's probably going to be in their plans in the next year or two. So I think he's going to get a shot to prove himself this year at some point. I mean, he could just end up being a September call-up, for all I know. But yeah. I think he'll have a chance to show what he can do.
Yeah. Or he's going to show some signs of life and immediately get traded.
Aww.
Right. That's
because I like DJ Peterson. I think he's had a lot of struggles that are probably not all really on him, and he also was a non-Jerry player, and it hasn't been great times for non-Jerry hitters in the organization of late. So if he shows some of that potential, I could just as easily see him getting flipped.
I think I'm going to go Tyler O'Neill. He comes up in September call-ups, and he knocks the stuffing out of the ball, and he helps us secure a wild card berth.
Next question we have is from Alex On. Hopefully I'm saying that correct.
The Ons. The cutest baseball family of all.
Biggest question mark in the field. First base is starting pitching at least treading water compared to last year. So that's a two-part question, obviously. What do you think? Biggest question mark? Position-wise, first base?
Yeah. I mean, if we're not counting catcher.
Yeah, that's probably the other one I would say.
I think catcher's a bigger question mark because we've seen enough of Valencia and we have a backup plan. We have several backup plans. We have no backup plan for catcher other than getting Carlos Ruiz to squat on his 38-year-old knees every day, which is no good for anyone.
I mean, he's going to get playing time because, there's going to be days where they'll need to spell Zunino. So we're going to see Ruiz out there probably more than you think, I bet.
And the backup plans at first base and most of the other positions, I guess shortstop doesn't really have a backup plan with upside. But the backup plans at first base have upside, at least. Yeah. They have obviously big downside, but Vogelbach you could see being a solid starter, even if Valencia is struggling. Yeah. Ruiz just... You're not going to extract 38-year-old man, power out of him. He just doesn't have it in. There's only so much dad strength can do.
Oh, and the rotation, I think, is... treading water is maybe a fair way to say. What I would say is, I think what they did was they dealt away a lot of talent in Walker in favor of consistency. And that was just, sure. I've been listening to all these Jerry interviews lately. And just something that comes across as I was listening to them bookended against each other is how frustrated he sounded with Taiwan, how frustrated Service sounded with Taiwan. Like, he just couldn't give them what they needed at the time when they needed it the most, which was some reliable innings. And we had to go the way of getting Wade LeBlanc and Joe Wieland and Cody Martin, and all of them had to eat innings because we were that shorthanded, because they just didn't get that consistency, and they didn't get that consistency out of Carnes. So if Smiley and Gallardo, or whoever it is, Heston, whoever it is, who is filling out that back end of the rotation, Miranda, if they can just be consistent performers, I think we will find ourselves ahead of where we were last year.
And it's the consistency thing, I think, is really important, as you said. The difference between, you know, having high upside players and between last year and this year is tough. You know, obviously, Carnes has never had an ace season, but he's shown ace stuff. And Taiwan, we all know all about Taiwan, but just having, you look at like what the Rangers had last year, which for many reasons was unsustainable, but they had people going out and pitching fine. They had, you know, you look at the Orioles last year, they had people going out and pitching fine.
Yep.
The Blue Jays last year had people going out and pitching. You know, they had Sanchez, who was really good, but, you know, for the most part, they had people going out and pitching fine. And if you have an offense like the Mariners do, and you have the defense behind them that the Mariners are intending to have, and you hopefully have some consistency in the bullpen, you can get by with fine and consistency. You can't get by with erratic performances. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest difference from last year to this year.
Well said. I agree.
Goodness.
All right. Last question we have is from Benjamin Kasperson. And he asked, who are your bounce back candidates and regression candidates for 2017 Seattle Mariners?
I feel like this might crowd a little into what we're going to talk about next time we record, which is going to be the rotation. Gallardo. Yeah, but actually my choice is probably Heston. I don't know what happened to him, but just watching his mechanics and some of the strikeouts, I don't know how things went so far south for him, but I think he can get back on track.
Jose, were you going to say Gallardo?
Yeah, that's who I'm hoping has a bounce back year. Yeah, I mean, he was late to camp last year. He was, and then he had the shoulder injury. He's already throwing his workout sessions. A couple weeks ago, he started. Yeah, I think the potential for bounce back is there, I hope.
I would agree on Gardo. I think his velocity came back last year after the injury, and his accuracy and consistency was really what he was struggling with, and that is common in pitchers who have arm injuries, especially early in the season, that disrupt your preparation, because your mechanics just take much longer to get back, especially when you just physically can't pitch. So having a full off season to get back and work, and you know, physically he's been there. He's thrown, I think it was over 180 innings in 8 of the last 9 years, and last year was the only one that he didn't. And in each of those years, he's been a two-win player or better.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't. He's 31 years old.
He's 30 now, but he'll be 31 by the start of the season.
Yeah. You know, he's not an old player. You know, I mean, obviously he's got a lot of innings, and we look at Felix in the same light in many ways. That, you know, he has pitched more than his age might indicate, but he's got, he still has plenty of innings left in him, and his age is not one where you think a bounce back is completely hopeless.
So yeah.
I'm right there with you on that. In terms of regression, I am very optimistic about Segura as a player, and I think that I don't put much into his 2 years of tragedy and sort of just terrible play, because I think that he has said in many ways, and it's borne out in the way he played, that he physically and mentally was just not there. But making the switch to playing shortstop full-time again is something that I am nervous with him about, especially because our backup shortstop is
Sean O'Malley
or Taylor Motter or Mike Freeman.
Agreed. And
it's the same thing. You know, in that sense, it's the same as last year where, yeah, Marte's stinking up the joint, but you know, you might have a replacement level player behind him, and that, and no upside whatsoever. So I don't know if he's going to fall off per se, but I think the Mariners need him to be a 2-3 win player at least. And if he's less than that, they need career years again from Cano and Cruz and Seager, probably. And that's a lot to ask.
All right. Well, thank you to those of you who sent in your questions. And please do continue to send those. You can send them to the Lookout Landing Twitter account, at Lookout Landing, or, like I said, Carrier Pigeon, etc. Thank you also for sticking with us. And thank you to John for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jose, next week we are going to cover the rotation and the bullpen, as well as some of the pitching depth that Jerry has piled up over the course of this offseason. And we will be joined by Jake Mailhot. Oh, gosh, I've never said his name out loud. I hope that's how you say it. Lookout Landing's designated pitching expert. So look for that next week, and thank you so much for listening. All right, we'll see you all virtually, I guess, next time. Here's how I found